Many years ago, Greta and I found ourselves in an in-between season. We had both just finished academic programs. I was waiting for my first job as a pastor. So we spent several months as volunteer staff at Holden Village, a retreat center located in the mountains in western Washington state. Holden is an isolated place, situated in a deep valley with steep, high ridges on both sides. And during the summer, the sun will make its way up over one ridge sometime during the mid-morning and go down again in the mid-afternoon. But that arc starts to diminish and lower as the months go by. And finally, in the late fall, the sun stops making it over that ridge altogether. There's still light over kind of on the other side of the ridge in the valley for part of the day, but the base of the valley itself, where the village is located, is in constant shadow. For 4 months, there's no sunlight down in the village. That annual farewell to the sun happened to coincide with our time as volunteers, and I sort of remember the buzz among people who had been through this before. As the days got shorter, people were careful to spend as much time outside as possible during the few hours of direct light, soaking in whatever they could. Because then one day, it was gone. The 4 months without light at Holden Village can be a bit of a tough slog. But at the end, there is this really great party. The light edges its way sort of back down that ridge little by little in the winter. And then finally, when the sun clears that peak again and bathes the whole place in light, usually in February sometime, this whole community bursts into celebration. It's still cold out. There's still snow everywhere, piled several feet high, but that doesn't matter. People are outside in the streets in t-shirts, singing and dancing and hooting and hollering and happily basking in the sun. I found myself thinking about that particular image, a community relishing the return of the light after a long season in the shadows, in spending time with our gospel reading this past week. "You are the light of the world," Jesus says. The statement can sound sort of pious and abstract and churchy, but just think of the difference that light makes for us. Lack of sunlight is very serious business. As Geneva residents, you all know plenty about this, right? When we have one of those stretches where the gloom settles in for weeks on end, many of us find our spirits dragging. And when we see the sun again, whether by heading up to the top of the Salève or being surprised by a bright, clear day, we might find ourselves gripped by some of that same unself-conscious joy that can leave you dancing in the street. It's actually quite a bold statement that Jesus is making, calling his hearers the light of the world. And that other image he uses, salt of the earth, is also a very strong one. Today we tend to think of salt as primarily a seasoning at the dinner table, but as you probably know, in the ancient world, its value went far beyond that. In a time before refrigeration, salt was an important preservative, a way to keep food from spoiling. It was used as medicines, as a kind of disinfectant. Salt was not just a culinary supply in Jesus' day. It was an essential part of daily life. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. That's the first thing that strikes me about those words today. What important and vital roles Jesus is giving to his followers. What a truly bold declaration he is making right here. We're tuning in to just a short section of the Sermon on the Mount this morning, this extended collection of Jesus' teachings that comes right at the start of his ministry in the Gospel of Matthew. The sermon began with the Beatitudes, where Jesus names groups of people often overlooked or trampled by society, the poor in spirit, the meek, the mourning, the peacemakers, and he deems them blessed, favored, highly honored by God. Jesus isn't simply saying that all those people will one day find comfort. More than that, his blessings outline a new set of values, a new way of living here and now, where no one is trampled, where no one is excluded, where gentleness and justice guide our steps. It's a tall order that he names in the Beatitudes, a world very far from the one that we know. And our reading today follows immediately. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. When you put all that together, it's as though Jesus is saying, here is the world that I have come to bring about. Here's the world as God means for it to be. And here is how you are going to be a part of it. You're going to be salt. You're going to be light. Notice that Jesus doesn't say you should be salt or try really hard to shine some light. He simply announces. He simply declares. This is who you are, because I have called you. You are part of my life and part of my work. That is just how it is. Now talk about a bold statement. All of you, he says, to his newly called disciples, to the crowd that's gathered all around, and to all of us as well. All of you are called. In a world where many are poor, many are grieving, many are hungry, many are suffering from violence, many are longing for justice, all of you are going to help preserve the goodness of life. You're going to be sources of healing and wholeness. You're going to shine in shadowy places and bring joy to downcast hearts. You are going to have an essential, vital role in all of this. We are meant to take this salt and light business seriously, I think. Jesus doesn't want us on the sidelines just wringing our hands in worry or waiting for someone else to step in and get involved, but right in the middle of things, a steady presence for the earth, for the world, for the common good. It is a strong, clear identity and calling that we find here. Yes, all that is right. But there is another side to both of these images too. And it seems to me that the two sides are meant to be held together. Because while salt and light are vital, necessary things, they are also, when you think about it, pretty humble ones. I mean, think about salt for a moment. The right amount in a dish basically enhances the other flavors that are already there. It makes the tomato sauce taste more like tomatoes. It makes the curry taste more like curry. It adds zip and zest without overpowering. If something simply tastes salty, the cook has probably used too much. And it's not so different with light. A beautifully lit room doesn't leave you staring at the lamps. It leaves you enjoying the pictures on the walls and the view out the windows and the warmth of the space and the company that's around you. If you are particularly noticing the light, there's probably too much. These are humble, ordinary images. Neither is actually meant to be the center of attention. Salt and light are doing their jobs best when they're barely noticed. Now, isn't that kind of a strange way for Jesus to describe the calling of his followers? I do not think the church has usually seen itself in this way. Much of the time, we Christians have been in the business of seeking attention, seeking authority, trying to be at the center of things, and complaining loudly when we feel sidelined. But that's not the picture at all here. A church that's salt and light is a humble one, recognizing that God is the center, that God is at work in many ways beyond us, and that our role, vital though it is always a supporting one. Eugene Peterson catches something of this in his poetic translation of this passage. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. You are here to be light, bringing out the God colors of this world. Have you spent time around someone who seems to bring out the best in others? Who, simply by being herself, with ease and generosity and no need to take up all the room, allows others to relax and be themselves? Isn't it a wonderful feeling to be around somebody like that? It's a little like what I hear in Jesus' words. A church that is salt and light isn't in the business of conquering or overpowering, trying to make everybody think and act and be like us. No, it's about looking beyond ourselves, supporting life in all its variety, helping others to thrive, recognizing and bringing out the wide array of God flavors and God colors in the world. A church like that partners with its neighbors and loves them for who they are. A church like that sees the image of God in each person. A church like that is curious, ready to discover God's activity in all sorts of places and languages and rhythms and people. A church like that brings hope and joy and healing simply by being who it is, a community bathed in God's love. Our world today, with all its divisions and violence and worry and hurt, needs a church like that. It needs us to be a church like that. So, here we are, friends, salt and light. Not someday when we're good and ready, not when we have finally learned enough and earned that title, but now. Jesus says so. It's a bold calling. The work of healing and preserving and seasoning and illuminating is serious business. And it's also a humble one, because it is not about us. It's about our great God, who has created a world of many colors and flavors, who loves it with abandon, and who means to bless it and make it whole. You are salt. You are light, Jesus says, today. So go out and be who you are. Thanks be to God. Amen.